Ah, that's my new music there for... they can't hear it because I've not got the headphones on. That's the new music for the book club, just coming up to 11:30 here at Phoenix and 98FM. Now I'm joined, it is the book club, and it is the gorgeous, the lovely, the multi-talented, the writer.
Oh.
The all-round do-gooder.
Oh dear.
That didn't sound good, did it? It's all right. Good egg, I should say. Good egg. Sylvia
good,
Ken.
Good morning.
Hello. Now, Sylvia, just to give everybody a little bit brief about your background.
Well, I'm a writer.
Yep.
And journalist, and writing for various local papers. Writing a book at the moment, but I told you all that last time.
And you've got a great blog. You do a blog as well.
I do a blog. 8 years now, but we get lots and lots of return visitors,
mm-hmm.
and they leave messages, and it's great fun. But I also do Twitter, and I also do Facebook.
Yes. Well, that's how you get in contact with people now,
yes.
isn't it? That's what everybody does. We're also joined by our guest today, Christine Brewster. Hello over there. Just about to see you above the screen. It's lovely to see you. Now, you are the curator at the Cater Museum on the High Street in Billericay.
Yes, and thank you for inviting me along today. I always love an opportunity to tell people about the museum because I think it's a wonderful Aladdin's cave on the High Street.
Excellent. Oh, you've got a fantastic speaking voice as well.
Hasn't she?
That should be for storytelling as well, I think.
She is brilliant. Yes.
Now, Sylvia, we're going to start with you first. Ask about what you've been up to, because you do have the Billericay Reading Group.
Yes, and that's the basis, isn't it, of this book club.
Yep.
And we're so lucky in the library. There's about 15 of us, and the library brings in the books that we have on our list, and it's all free of charge, which is lovely. Don't have to run out and buy them, and we all read and then meet, and that's when the fun starts, because some like books and some don't like the story, and there's usually almost a fight, you know.
Yep.
But I'm only joking. It's lots of fun, and just lately we've been going through quite a list of the classics, but they know that I can't keep up with them, because when you're working on a book, you're usually researching.
Yeah.
And my stuff is historical, and so I've been reading Colchester Memories, Essex at War, On the Home Front, and as you've guessed, it's because it's a very special time. Chris will link into this because she will tell you what we're doing in the museum.
Yep.
It's, you know, 1914, 2014, very, very important. So I've been literally reading about mortar guns and tanks and the poor chaps that went off in 1914 with such excitement.
Mm.
Of course, we know what happened, but they didn't. So that's what I've been reading at the moment. My head is full of it, because that's going into my own book as well.
Yeah.
But Chris will tell you about our display of First World War memorabilia.
Before you do that, if you can just move around to the microphone a little bit more, Chris, if that's okay, just so you're directly in front of it, because it's just sounded like you were very far away when you were speaking first off. Just make sure you're there. I think that might be better if you get right onto the mic.
Yeah.
That's the one. Whereabouts are you from? Whereabouts are you originally from with that fantastic accent?
I'm originally from Detroit in Michigan.
And how long have you been over in the UK?
I've been here 39 years.
Wow!
Haven't lost the accent.
Yep.
But one of my favorite sayings is, you can take the person out of the country, but you can't take the country out of the person.
And did you settle here? You've always been in the same area, or have you moved around all over the UK?
No, I came down from Cheshire.
Yep.
I worked in the silk museums in Macclesfield, and moved to Essex in 1996.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think of great county, isn't it, Essex?
Oh, I think it's wonderful.
Yep.
It's so friendly. I don't actually live in Billericay. I work there.
Mm.
I live in Malden. And I think I'm just so lucky. They're two of the friendliest towns to be in.
Yeah. Now, the museum, Cater Museum, 74 the High Street, if people are not aware of the museum, tell everybody about how you actually got involved with the museum and what you do there.
Well, the museum is a little gem. It's in an 18th century building that is a rebuild of a building that was built in Armada year 1588. So the rear door covering of the building is the original carved bit with the initials of the man who built the building in 1588, IB for Isaac Burgess. And most of the timbers inside the building are from that original building, except some are much earlier, because when you take up the floorboards to do repairs, as we have done in the past, you have medieval building materials underneath the floorboards, and they're all very carefully numbered with Roman numerals.
Oh, wow.
So it's a real little treasure trove. Mm. I'm very lucky to be the caretaker, the curator there. I came down, as I say, from Cheshire and needed a job. And I got a job at a local school at Doddinghurst, in the junior school, and one of the teachers came in with an advertisement one day saying, you have to apply for this, and it was the job that I have now. And so I've just been very, very happy there.
So tell us, as Sylvie was saying earlier, what's actually on display at the moment? What are you covering at the moment in the museum?
Well, the museum always has room settings from the Victorian and Edwardian periods. It always has Billericay at War. It always has the archaeological finds, the wooden furniture, the beautiful herb and kitchen garden. But what we have done for the anniversary of the First World War is convert some of the display space to make a larger First World War display. Yep. And people have been bringing in their own mementos, and we're constantly doing a rollover. So when you come and view that display, there will always be different things in it.
Yeah.
And we've redisplayed the Zeppelin pieces, because, of course, that was Billericay's great claim to fame during the First World War. The L-32 was shot down outside of Billericay.
I didn't know that.
And I've brought some of our First World War brochures for what we're doing over the next 5 years. Mm. We have a roll-on, roll-off series of displays and events. The first big event will be the 25th of October. We've hired the reading rooms. We're going to be there in the afternoon with a display in conjunction with the Western Front Association. One of the gentlemen is coming dressed as a Tommy, and he'll explain the kit and the equipment to the children.
Yep.
We have a large display going up in the reading rooms, and then in the evening we have the first of a series of lectures. This first one is entitled Over by Christmas.
Yeah.
And we will carry on actually 1 year past the war ending. And the reason for that is we know the stories of people in Billericay who came back wounded, who came back with their lives shattered by the war, and we're going to do the follow-up as well. And we are combining every lecture with the global view and the men from Billericay with the help of local historian Karen Dennis.
Excellent. It's
a lot going on. Oh, yes.
Now, I've just got to do a quick break for some travel. Then we're going to come back and we're going to talk more. Also, we're going to be talking about your book as well, which is Harry Richman, who went around Billericay in great bursts of painting some of our now well-known places. So we'll be talking to you about that. Mm-hmm. And also we'll be having more of a chat with the lovely Sylvia, who has brought me in today, I must admit, because every time she comes in, she brings me something in. This is not for me, it's for my mum. It will make it there. Lemon curd.
Good.
Yes, she loves her. Yeah, I will take it to her. She's diabetic. But don't worry, it's fine. She'll
it's,
get it.
It's really for you, but I thought if you don't really want it, you can. Yeah.
I love lemon. Everything you make, she made me pickles, jams, all sorts of things, and they're like gone. It's like wipe them out within a week. Right, 11.
Phoenix FM.
I'm joined by this month's book club, which is Sylvia Kent, as always, and our special guest, Christine Brewster, who is the creator actually, of the Case Museum, 74 High Street in Billericay, and also Sylvia's a trustee at the museum as well. Now, you've written a book as well. You do a lot of... besides doing all that work, and you've got time to write a book.
She does. Well, with difficulty.
Well, it was a joint project.
Mm-hmm.
Another trustee, Barbara Birdsall, and I, with Sylvia's help, we edited hand-drawn and watercolor pictures done by the first curator, Harry Richman.
Mm-hmm.
We have a huge number of these in a collection in the museum. And we had great fun not only choosing which ones we thought would be of most interest and which would reproduce the best in a book, but going around finding these buildings today, if they're still standing, and writing a bit about what has happened to those buildings in the interim period.
And who could just tell us a little bit about the so it's all by the same artist, all these pictures. So tell us a little bit about when he was alive and you know.
Yes, he was lovely, wasn't he? We didn't know him.
Yeah.
Because this was 50 odd years ago, wasn't it, Chris? But we seem to know him. His portrait is in the in our museum, and we know the family, and. Yes, we know. We've read his letters and his notes. We seem to know him.
Was he actually an artist, or was that something he just did on the sort of, you know,
Well, he was a self-taught historian and artist both. But there are three watercolor pictures in this book that were done by his father.
Yeah.
And we have the most incredible embroidery on an 18th-century silk picture done by his grandfather, as well as a carved chair. So I'm sure that talent ran in the family.
Yeah.
And he would go walking all around Billericay and the locales around with a sketchbook, with a notebook, making notes, drawing pictures, and a lot of the pictures that he drew and some that appear in this book were then the basis for an 18-foot-long model of the High Street and Chapel Street in Billericay.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
We're going to have it on display, are we not?
Well, we've had it on about every 3 years.
Yeah.
We hire the reading rooms. We have no room large enough to show it at the museum.
I was going to say, with these old houses and old buildings, it was, I don't know if I'm correct, I'm sure I saw a programme on TV about it. Was it during the war that a lot of these places actually got destroyed? I remember seeing a programme about all these amazing sort of stately homes and everything, because I don't know if it's to do with taxes or what happened, but there was no preserve on buildings at the time, and a lot of these buildings disappeared. So are there buildings obviously in that book that now just no longer
That's
exist?
True, isn't it, Chris?
There are a lot of buildings that no longer exist, and nationwide, I think the problem began with the First World War.
Yeah.
A lot of the richer families could not afford the estate taxes, the inheritance taxes, to maintain, and especially when they had a high mortality rate in the war.
Yeah.
And that carried on. Now, during the Second World War, a lot of these buildings, again, were used by the Ministry of Defense for the Army. And I'm just opening the book to the picture of one in particular, which is Herlock's, an incredibly beautiful building that's no longer standing, that was on the High Street of Billericay.
Yeah.
And you can see the Belvedere at the top of this building, which during World War II was used as a lookout post. Now, the Army did not deal in a friendly manner with this building, and at the end of the war, rather than do extensive repairs, the building was sold off and demolished.
Yeah.
And that is a fairly common story, I'm afraid.
It's a pub now.
Yeah.
The Blue Ball.
Oh, right. Yeah,
yep.
Yeah.
Yes,
yep.
Of course, it's a modern building on that site. Yes.
Do you think with, I've said this before, I mean, we're now in the age of Twitter, and we've got Facebook, and, you know, the media, you can read everything about anything that happens in the world so very, very quickly. Do you think if there was a war, I mean, if you're going back into the First World War, people actually had a belief in Britain. They wanted to fight for their country. Young men would have died for their country. Do you think things, you know, if we had a war tomorrow, it would be completely different just because of the way the world is now?
We know so much more, don't we?
Because those poor lads went over the top. They would have had no idea. They knew, quite a lot of them knew that they were just going over to be shot. That was it. It was just rows upon rows of,
you know, gassed.
Yeah. There are still a lot of volunteers going into the armed forces, but I think there's a lot more awareness of what's going on.
Yeah.
because that blind following has stopped.
Yeah.
People are so acutely aware of what's going on, and they can no longer keep secrets on the front from the people at home, where they would ban photographs of dead bodies. Now somebody takes out their mobile phone and they send home whatever they want.
Yeah.
So it is a different world.
Completely
today.
Different. I don't know if it's better, do you?
Well, we're certainly better informed.
I think the series, if you've ever watched Blackadder, which was the last series that they did, which was based around being on the front line in the First World War, and the final shot of that was them being, all of them being shot as they went over in their ranks. That was very, very moving. But it was the case of if you were upper class, you didn't go over. Yes. You didn't go over first. It was everybody else went before you.
The old class system. Yes.
Although one thing that really stands out is the high mortality rate in the First World War of especially junior officers. Whereas in following wars, officers didn't lead from the front as much.
Because you're interested in history, to ask you both this question, is there any time, I know we're alive now and it's 2014, but have you got a particular period that you think, well, actually, if I wasn't born now, I would have loved to have been born in that century, or are you happy to be born today? Or is there some, you know, is there part of you thinks, oh, I wouldn't mind being born in the 1500s, or things would have been different?
I would like Edwardian. If I was in that higher echelon, knowing me, I would be a scullery maid with my poor red hands, you know. But that 10-11 years from 1901 to 1911, was it? That 10 years, those days of glory, I would have liked that.
Yeah.
Because I study that. That's my particular thing at the moment. But I don't know. What do you think, Chris?
Well, I would go back further, but having said that, I have very often, with a class of children, told the whole class to stand up and gone through a number of diseases and asked the children to sit down if they've had that disease, because then in that period in history, they wouldn't have survived.
No. Yeah.
So I could say I would love to have been a fly on the wall and come into this tremendous flowering of learning and art in the Saxon period. It would have been a much different mortality rate then, but that has always been my biggest interest.
And what is coming up for you, besides obviously you've got the museum, what are your next plans? Are you writing any more books, or you're going on a little bit of a travel.
I am going on a bit of a trip, and I have some other books. I've brought another one along to show you. And in fact, to give you.
Oh, lovely.
I have done a series of three children's books about the incredible greyhound I shared my home with. Now, Sylvia will know, as we drove around the countryside in my van looking for all of the buildings in Harry Richmond's book, buildings like Shoulder Hall and the almshouses, he sat in the back of the van and came around with us. He was a very incredible dog. His name was Rocky. And there's a series of three children's books that we sell in aid of Clark's Farm Greyhound Rescue. And I'm hoping to bring out the fourth. The fourth will be posthumously, because I have lost him. Unfortunately, dogs don't live as long as we do.
No.
But on a brighter note, I was asked if I would take in another rescue greyhound who needed a home, and I now have my Rocky's cousin named Rocket.
Oh, I get mixed up sometimes.
I like that. And it's called Rocky Finds His Feet, The Stories of Rocky the Racing Greyhound. That's by Christine Brewster. That's lovely.
It's lovely.
Lovely, really.
Is. And the children just speaks to the children, doesn't it? Because, you know, the photos are gorgeous too.
And your trip.
And my trip is related to children as well. I very sadly lost my husband some years ago. And at the same time, we both had a very good friend who died within a year of him, also of cancer, who remembered me in her will. And I have financed a school in the Ivory Coast in memory of Ray and of Jenny. And this year I'm going out to meet the children in the school. They have worked very hard. The community took this project on board in a way that wouldn't be possible everywhere. Every brick in that school they handmade. And they are now growing the palm trees for timber for the next set of classrooms. Now, in the Ivory Coast, the official language is French. I speak Spanish and German. So this is a big challenge for me. I've been working away with a book called 15 Minute French. 15 minutes every night. And hopefully I'll be able to, you know, get by with the basics.
Yeah. That's fabulous. That is fabulous. And what are you going to be? Now, you're not going to be going on any travels, are you?
No, I hate travelling.
Sylvia.
I don't like those injections. Poor Chris is suffering from injections of some sort.
I have two very bad sore arms.
All right.
I have had injections for everything.
Yeah. All I'm going, the place I'm going to is Creekmouth next week, because I have to cover that big body, you know, in my book.
Yep.
And meet some of the American people actually who are building houses down there. So but my Creekmouth is 100 years ago.
Yep.
And part of the marsh, and you know, I always look back. Chris is looking forward, I'm looking back.
So. Now, you do have to say, before you go, you do have to say a few hellos to people, because they'll be upset if you don't mention them now.
Yes.
So go ahead.
Well, certainly my sister, Elizabeth, who is in Denver, and the Denver Women's Group, and all the Society of Women Writers and Journalists who are listening this morning.
Hello, ladies.
Yeah, hello, ladies. Oh, and a couple of gents. We take men now. And as you know, we have our 120th anniversary this year, in October, on the 14th. So hello and goodbye, and thank you for having us in this morning.
You're welcome. And yourself, who have you got to say hello to?
A very big hello to our team of volunteers at the museum. To Leslie and Richard and Roy and Dave and another Dave and Katie and Pauline, who does our publicity for us and makes the most incredible lavender bags out of lace and ribbons. And thank you so much for inviting me along.
You're welcome.
Today.
You've got one of the most beautiful voices.
Isn't it gorgeous?
It's lovely. I could sit here all day.
I could as well.
Fabulous. Thank you both very much for coming into the studio. Don't forget, Book Club is back again next month in May.
Yes.
We've been going for nearly 2 years. I think it's three years.
Yeah.
Time's going too. I wonder what gifts I'm going to get next month. Right, I shouldn't say that. Right, it's just going to be up to nearly 12 o'clock. I'll be back. Don't forget, the question of the day for today is about superhero powers. I wanted to know, if you could have a superhero power for the day, what would it be and why? We're also going to be talking about fondue, because I had some last night and it was delicious, and how a 115-year-old woman is holding the key to a longer life. DNA analysis reveals clues to the limits of human life.